So how is it going with the
Good,
whole
man.
with the COVID situation as well?
Yeah, it's we started trickling back into the office, and yeah, it's been all right. It's nice to be back in the office. Got a lot of good crew hanging out, making it rain as usual, which is nice. All good.
Good, good, good. Okay. Thank you for joining, first of all, today. And this is the start of a day for us, and perhaps you are ending your Monday. But so what's been the difference? Like you mentioned, you're just getting with the office. You're going back to the office and working from the office itself. So, what has changed? Going to the office.
It's pretty empty. We've got two floors here in Sydney, and one floor is empty, and the one that we're on is, everyone's sort of sitting a good distance away from each other. But it's just a bit, I don't know, like it's nice to be back because you get to talk to people and there's a good energy to it. And most of our other offices are still closed. And that's kind of, it's kind of unusual, but we were already very virtual as a business. We ran a lot of the business from Zoom in the beginning. So I'm not sure whether it necessarily was a major change for us. We were set up like that from the beginning. Slack, Google Docs, all the meeting rooms have video conferencing in them. It was just that's how we began from the start. And our US business has around 70 people, and I'd say 25 of them work from the New York office, and the rest are all over the US. So, from Tennessee to California to they're everywhere. I don't think it was necessarily a major change. It was actually probably more a leveler for everyone to be on a similar schedule, similar style of work. I think it's given everyone a lot more time to work and to think and to ponder. And for me personally, I find it challenging not being around people. I get a lot of energy, get a lot of thought, like to kick ideas around. I think other people who are quite introverted have enjoyed it and loved it. They're like, yes, thank you for not being interrupted and not interrupting me, and I can determine when I can be interrupted, so you kind of got that bouncer there. Yeah, but I think I'm on the other side, which is, more the extroverted side, and I've struggled with that, particularly in communicating ideas visually. I think I found that very challenging.
I mean, this is difficult time. There's no doubt about that, and perhaps most of us are finding ourselves staying home and working, and perhaps some of us, like we used to do this for quite some time, and for us it was quite normal. But yet, finding people and meeting people and then talking through the challenges, face to face. I think that's different from trying to solve it over Zoom.
100%. Particularly that I think, discovering and getting, that serendipity that you normally get at events, at just through meeting people. I think that's always been, a really nice thing, but it's been very challenging in and of itself. And I think it goes back to you kind of have these sort of unstructured hangout meetings now, where you're just sort of meeting people, inviting them along and coming to talk and hang out. And then the thing I think has gotten really big is, Twitter and LinkedIn, I think, have become a lot more important from a networking and a serendipity perspective. The only other thing I think is very interesting about is I feel like the sort of the geographic competitiveness of being in a certain location has been leveled in that mm-hmm. everyone's kind of on a similar playing field now. And it's something which I personally have always struggled with. You know, Australia is a very, I'd say, not geographically dominant place to be due to it's just in the middle of two, you know, European time zone and the American time zone. Obviously, it's very aligned with the Asian time zone, but it's not, you know, it's just very dislocated. And it's a long way to go to Australia from pretty much anywhere. And so I think that's kind of that playing field's been kind of leveled to some extent. And that's an interesting dimension, which I personally have found quite good because I'm quite used to being not in the same geography as someone else and, you know, dealing with that remotely and that remoteness and how to go about that and how to meet people. And that probably, again, is kind of nice. But again, I think you're right. Building that connection and establishing those friendships and frameworks that ordinarily you would do in person is much harder.
Right. Let's try to sort of, you know, I would like to start from your journey as an entrepreneur. What were you thinking when you were like, okay, you know, I need to maybe start with creation of a solutions. Maybe you saw a problem and then perhaps it's not your first venture. Maybe I want to start there.
Yeah. So originally I started building websites for people, which, mm-hmm. you know, was a, you know, quite a good thing to learn the real fundamentals and basics of building websites and marketing them for people. And Frank, who's the other founder of Finder, we both did that together. And, you know, that building block of doing services, I think teaches you probably, you know, to be very dynamic, to learn fast, to adapt. But it's a brutal business. It's not a fun business. It's a very, well, for me, I didn't find it fun. I found it grueling, grinding, and commoditized, which is probably the, you know, one of a couple of the worst things you could possibly add together in a business. but that gave us the building blocks of pretty much telling us everything not to do. You know, don't build a commoditized product. Don't build something unscalable. Don't build a service that's, you know, purely reliant on people. And again, and I think one of the challenges with an agency model is it's kind of adversarial in that you're trying to basically give the least amount of product to your customer and charge the most amount of money and for it to cost the least amount to produce, which is, you know, again, kind of adversarial and not great for you as a customer or anyone inside the company, really. It grinds both ways. But I think, you know, we learn a lot of different businesses from that and really fast and a great introduction to them. And that kind of gave us the platform to say, hey, you know, we've learned these skills, we've mastered them. What if we start building our own websites? And that's, you know, that I don't know if that was necessarily the ultimate in. So sitting back then in 2006, that was like a dream. It was like, imagine if we built our own websites, you know, we've built, you yeah. know, so many others for everyone else, but that was like the mecca, you know, that was like the cornucopia of controlling your own destiny. And that was a big leap for us. So, you know, we took a big risk doing that because there's no revenue. In the beginning, you know, with any website, it takes a while for it to get up and running and going. But what we could do is just because, you know, I developed a lot of personal skills. I personally built a lot of the code, the design, and I did the SEO, wrote content. I did everything really in the very beginning to build up, you know, I guess the business in so much that it could start to earn some decent revenue. So, you know, we then sold the other agency. We did an earnout. And then we paused the comparison business. It was called Credit Card Finder back then. And we kind of came back to it in 2009 when we left the other company, the public company that we sold the company to. And that was the point when we really started Credit Card Finder. And, you know, that's a very niche business in and of itself. So it's great because you just focused on one thing, comparing credit cards all day, every day, you know. And that focus, I think, is very good in building a great product in the beginning. But over time, obviously, the runway tends to run, you know, it runs out a bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that doesn't provide the most amount of scale. So, you know, obviously, we had some more challenges then. And we decided to broaden those. And that's when we decided to go overseas.
Mm-hmm. When you said, like, you were just doing the comparison of credit cards at the beginning, what has changed so far? Then you've said maybe you've now added more layers to that, perhaps?
Yeah. So more comparisons, you know, home loans, insurances, shopping, you know, we compare all sorts of things, VPN, merchant services. I think we just launched DNA kit comparison the other day.
Mm. Kind of cool. DNA comparison, tell me about it now.
Well, you know, there's a whole series of ways you can get your DNA, you know, checked, and we provide a comparison for all the different services that you can potentially do that with, which is very cool. I think the one of the most exciting ones we did the other day was how to go to space. So we plotted out like the six ways you can basically go to space, and how much they cost and how long it'll take, you know, which is kind of fun again as well. and which is kind of cool.
What is the cheapest one, by the way? I would like to see that.
you have to check the website. I think there's a Russian service or something like that. I think it's about 175,000 US or something. Okay. And they'll take you up to space and then bring you back. Which is, kind of unusual. but, you know, I think that was one thing. So it's, you know, doing more comparisons. And I think the next thing was going into new geographies. And that, and then again, basically, you know, a lot of products are not global. A lot of products are different, particularly in financial services around the world. And, you know, the US sort of setup and the European setup and the Asian setup are all very different compared to each other. And so they're kind of whole new comparisons in and of themselves, which is exciting.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned, like, you know, you're now doing quite a variety of different segments, like, you know, insurance and so forth. When you compare different sectors, like, you know, insurance to, I don't know, the credit cards to other sectors, where do you think the innovation is, you know, rapid, and it's something that, you know, we need to pay attention to?
I think the biggest change right now in financial services, particularly, is the advent of open banking. And that's being rolled out. I think there's like 73 different countries around the world that are doing it in some way, shape, or form. It's been running now for quite a while in Europe and in the UK, and it's just launched in Australia. I think Japan's quite ahead on this as well. And I think Singapore is on its way. I think what the big change there and why it's so interesting is finally you'll be able to access your own data and share it with third-party services and get them to analyze your transactions and, you know, make suggestions, essentially. And that's a big deal because traditionally, yes, you know, financial services companies have provided these analytics tools, but none of them are going to tell you to switch accounts. None of them are going to tell you to switch products because that's not in their interest. And I'm sure there are, you know, and we are finding this. Like, we've obviously built one of these products in this market, and it's where we're investing heavily. And there's just so many changes happening. But what we've noticed is actually very simple insights have not really ever been told to customers, you know, to just inform them of the extra fees they're paying if they pay in a certain way, or, informing them that if they were to, you know, pay their mortgage fortnightly as opposed to monthly, it'll save them like a whole bunch of money over the lifetime of the loan. And these ideas are actually very, again, they're quite simple, but, and the technology's there. And a lot of these financial companies would have had that, have those possibilities, have the opportunities there, but they're not incentivized, right? So in other words, with your money, no one's ever been technologically incentivized to go and build a product or service that is neutral or, in other words, or potentially more on the side of the customer. And so what that means is there's a huge space opening up and opened up all around in many countries around the world. I think it'll take a long time before America gets to that place. But I definitely think there are a lot of countries right now that are moving towards this and or have moved and are rolling out some incredible stuff. Some, you know, the UK is just ballooning with fintech companies right now. And I think it's incredible. I think it's the future. I think, you know, we're seeing some amazing innovations in Asia right now, with payments, with wallets, digital wallets in particular that are taking over. And, you know, in many cases, we've seen, or we are seeing a lot of more, digital wallets, are open rather than bank accounts because it's just faster, easier, and, you know, it's all on your phone. And I think we're going to see that more and more. That's just the trend. People are comfortable with, you know, not carrying cash, and right now in particular, I think there's an aversion to carrying and holding cash right now, just because of its cleanliness. You know, it's slightly unsanitary. And this idea of moving toward digital payments, I think it's been fast forwarded. That's sort of been brought into the future. The extreme version of this is probably cryptocurrency, which again I think is having a big boom right now and a real movement. And I think there's a lot of cadence. I think the sort of adoption curve of cryptocurrency has been fast forwarded like maybe 3 years because people are just now comfortable with going, yep, my money is just, you know, a couple of digits that are sitting in my app. And that's it. And that's really what, you know, cryptocurrency looks like as well.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You talked about a few different things, one of the core area that I'm really interested in is in the fintech, and I am sort of, you know, looking at the traditional organizations like, you know, the financial industry, the banks, the traditional banks, and then I look around and I see startups like the innovative startups like Revolut, you know, just an example. I find Revolut as a, let's say, one of those future companies, but still it is a beta version for, I don't know, cryptocurrency. How do you see those innovations compared to the traditional bank? Like, what kind of catching up they need to do?
Well, I think the first thing is it's just digitizing everything, you know, and making it very accessible and easy to use. But, you know, I give credit to traditional banks and financial companies because, you know, they took us from pieces of paper, you know, and little tiny books and checks, and they digitized all of that. And that's incredible. Like, I think it's awesome what they've done. It's a massive leap forward. And the banks that sort of evolved faster and built better technology got an edge. I reckon they are, the current banks that we have today are the fintechs. They were the fintechs. And now what you've got is, you know, they've piled on just so much technical debt underlying a lot of that, you know, technology that that fintech that they did in the past. What you're seeing now is, I guess, a layer being built on top of that, or, you know, new banks opening up which don't quite have that same architecture and technical debt and can start to move faster and start to offer different services and start to offer, I guess, a more liberated user experience. And I think that's, you know, that's pretty much the same thing that banks did, right? So instead of going into a branch, they built you an app. Awesome. You could do all your banking just in the same way. They enabled that with the customer. which is great. And what the digital bank is saying is like, okay, well, we've got that's sort of table stakes. We're just going to start from there. But now we're going to offer you all these other services along with it that, you know, should be one click, that are, integrated into the one place. And you can kind of see all your banks and financial, services all in one spot. And I think the next evolution of that is, okay, let's not make it a bank. Let's just make it a third-party application. Let's just leave the bank as a bank and, obfuscate those two things and start to say, hey, let's start actually put a service layer on top of all of those services and aggregate them together and really smooth them out. I think, that's the evolution that I think cryptocurrency in particular needs. But also, most people, find it challenging when all their stuff's in different places. And we just kind of need this all aggregated together to make it a lot simpler. I think that's where the movement is. That's where the tectonic plates are really starting to change.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree that, sometimes I'm talking to a lot of innovators in this space, and most of the terms that we are using is so alien to a lot of folks, like who are at the end are going to be the consumer. Perhaps we should start to talk more in a user-friendly way. Maybe we should say it would simplify the transaction, or it would do this, in a more simplistic way. Maybe that is something that we are missing at the moment.
I think you're right. I think boiling things down to the simplest version that's possible. Let's take an example, right? Let's think about money transfers, and let's go back in time. Let's go back maybe 15 years, or maybe even 10 years. 2010, think about how you'd do a money transfer. It was quite a complicated process. You would go, I guess, to your bank or to a shop.
Yep.
A physical shop. Is that, would you say that's fair?
Yeah. And, you go ahead.
And then... or you would, call up a broker, I guess. And, it wasn't sort of clear where to go and what to do and the process. And now I think what we've seen is really, it's just some very simple front ends that have been stamped on the front to open up pretty much what was probably the interface that the broker or dealer at the shop or the one you called had. It was probably their interface, the exact same thing, just turned around and now given to the customer. That's probably what happened. With a few less bumps and, potholes and smoothings and, you don't need all necessarily some of the bits and pieces. And that was really the evolution, right? It was the transition of the operator. Now the customer can actually be that operator and do it themselves at any time, anywhere they want, and with relative ease and speed. And I think that's probably but what I'm trying to submit is I agree with you. I think that simplicity, that simplifying, zoomed out and obfuscated, that's kind of what we stamped on the front of a whole lot of other services as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. And how do you personally think about your own adoption as far as Bitcoin or any cryptocurrencies are concerned? Have you also tried it out, like as far as being an investor or, being a user as such?
So I got very involved. I was involved in Bitcoin early on. And then I kind of lost interest. And then I got back into it in around 2017. About August, and then I launched a cryptocurrency brokerage in 2018, and we recently sold that to another cryptocurrency exchange. So I went very deep and down the rabbit hole of cryptocurrency.
Tell me about it.
And
I have a feeling it was not a good ending. You know, I'm just hoping it was a good ending for you.
Oh, it's great.
Ah, okay.
You know, I figured out, and I have a personal position on all these things, and I sort of stepped through them all, and at the end of the day, I have a big investment in cryptocurrency personally, and I'm very comfortable with it. I totally understand it's a volatile asset, Bitcoin. But there's also some really good DeFi stuff out there right now. I'm not talking about sort of this degeneration, degen stuff. I don't really understand and want to get into that. I think it's all a bit much for me. But I do think some of the CeFi stuff, even the centralized finance and the DeFi stuff, I think is very good. I think it's great. I think it's a great example and a great use case. And it's not going away in crypto. And in fact, it's finally sort of breaking through to that other side where I think we're seeing a real application where people can really start to use crypto for a purpose in that, it's decentralizing finance in terms of, you can be a lender and you can be a borrower, and there's just a piece of code that sits in between the two of them. And that's great. It's what, it's what obviously, crypto was trying to do for a long time. I think Bitcoin is a whole other thing. I think it's that's a narrative around, store of value, and, a hedge against inflation and a place to store your money for the long term. I think I see it more like digital gold. I don't think it's a currency. I think it's more like money in that it holds value. I think Ethereum is, constantly that safe place to try, and do, of every network that's out there, Ethereum always comes back to being that safe place because it's done so many, it's done the ICO boom, it's done the DeFi boom, and it just keeps being that reliable place. Yes, it's probably not the most efficient. Yes, it's probably, there's better ones out there, but it is very secure. It's been proven time and time again. And the longer it goes on, it's probably going to, have that effect where it will probably be the eventual network that people use for smart contracts.
And, there must be something, look, as an entrepreneur, like, when you are doing a number of things, and there must be something that you felt like, damn, this is an incredible idea. Your friends and family may have supported that because they don't want to spoil you. But when you actually brought it to the market, you felt like, shit, I screwed up. Was there any such startups or anything that you brought to the market that didn't go according to the plan?
Oh, plenty of things that didn't work out. there's a big graveyard at the back of ideas that didn't quite work out.
No, you want to talk about those where you said, okay, this is definitely going to work out.
Yeah. There's plenty. What Frank and I used to have, we experimented with a poker business. So we had poker tables, poker chip sets, and we used to send them all around to people that bought them on our website, and so it sort of ticked over. Again, it was not the best business because sending a giant poker table, shipping it around, is probably, the shipping cost alone is probably 50% of the cost of the table. But it was interesting. It was, people did buy the stuff and it was great. And it sort of ticked over. I don't think it was a great success, but it sort of worked out. We had a website that did Sudoku. We had a website that did Mother's Day presents. And we've done, and businesses in Finder we've done, or campaigns we've done and they failed. And the worst ones are where, protest groups get really angry and then they start calling and emailing and tweeting you and getting really angry because of what you said. And you've got to pull the campaign down, which is, kind of hostile. Unintentional, but, it happens. I think any idea, you kind of have 30% of the information and the rest, you got, I think even when you do launch it, you have very few actual comprehension of where that idea will go and how far it'll take to get there. And I think Finder as a business is the same thing. You know, we just constantly reinvented what it is and how we look at it and how we present it to the world. And that, you know, that's an evolution. That's a, hey, ooh, I realize this about the customer now. Oh, wow, people, you know, these technologies are available and people like to do this. Wow, we could probably offer that as a product. And I think that's probably our way of doing things is quite organic in that sense. And we set, you know, a very basic plan, go and do it. And then we check it out and we sort of have a new vista and we say, hey, okay, now we're here. Let's make a new plan. And that's sort of, you know, how we kind of go about things. And then we've kind of now set some big sort of 5-year goals and where we're trying to get to and what we're trying to do. And that's really exciting that, you know, we have a good clarity on, you know, worldwide where we want to go and what we want to do. And that's a nice feeling as opposed to that wandering kind of aimless, lost experimenting, which is fine. And I love experimenting. I love testing things out, but that level of uncertainty, a lot of other people don't like that. And you can't plan as well and you can't, you know, get speed and efficiency because you kind of stop starting and pivoting continuously.
And in spite of the present challenges, how do you see your own plan now? And maybe along the way, you may need to adapt a little bit towards how you offer services to your client. Is that something already in your mind?
So I think not really. I think people have been using us, you know, obviously we're mainly just a website and now an app that sits on your phone and it's very intimate, it's a very private and personal experience using Finder for people. And it's always has been and always will be. I just think we're becoming closer to the customer, understanding them and helping them and sharing better insights and better ideas than we were before. I think our plan remains the same. And I think, you know, our customers are expecting and working with them the same way. I think the difference probably is there's probably more people online now. There's more people concerned about their finances and there's more people, you know, looking to save money, which is great. You know, you know, what we've been trying to do for a long time is now kind of the order of the day. And that wasn't the case, I think, in the past, but now it is.
If you are using your businesses, you know, 100% online, then, you know, it fundamentally doesn't change much. Sometimes, like you said, you know, people are more connected to the internet now, and it means they're more worried about the finance and the limited availability of the fund, you know, accessible to them. You know, perhaps that's going to be more interesting with the way people use your applications.
Totally, 100% agree.
Let's talk about your own office. Like in an earlier conversation, you said like you like the fact that, you know, you're back into the office and maybe it's not 100%, but still you have people now around. And when we talk about people, you know, when you talk about your own company culture overall, how do you explain your company culture to the rest of the world?
Well, I think a lot of the feeling at Finder is about achievement and outcome, personal growth and success. And I think that sort of starts, that's the kernel, right? That's where it begins. And there are a lot of very smart and motivated and people at Finder. They are, you know, it's a very high bar to get in. There's a lot of interviews, a lot of testing that's done. But when you're around a lot of other high flying and, you know, top performing people, you step up as well. So you feel compelled and you enjoy that feeling of stepping up. And I think that's what people enjoy about the business. They like that feeling of being around high performing people. I think there's a very, So our second value at Finder is to be straight up. And what that means is we just tell it as it is. You know, everyone tells each other, they give feedback. And you've got to learn to receive feedback as well. But, you know, it's just straight to the point. And I think that removes a lot of the you know, bigger business, political stuff, there's a lot, just a lot less of that, because everyone just tells it straight. The other thing, you know, we have a big, our third value of Finder is go live, and we just have this bias to putting things live on the internet. People love to launch things at Finder. They're excited. They get, you know, they just want to do it now. They just want to get on the internet. They want to, you know, build it or post it or call someone or sell something or, you know, buy something, whatever it may be. They, you know, people want to get stuff done at Finder. They relish that enjoyment, and everyone likes to be around those other people as well. And we all enjoy getting things done and getting the outcome and winning. You know, there's a real feeling around that. There's a currency in the office and in the company around celebrating wins. And obviously highlighting challenges as well. Like, you know, when people highlight and say, hey, can I get some help? I need to rally towards this. People will come to your aid because they want to help. That's our first value, which is one crew. Everyone's only on one team here. It's there is only one crew. And, you know, if there's a hole in the boat, it's everyone's problems, right? And that's, I think, because the founders are still very much in the business. They're not, you know, operational, but we've chosen other leaders that are very driven and share those values as well. And I think that has cascaded on and on within the company. The founders are very visible. We all sit together. There's no offices. You know, everyone sits together. And I think it's just, you know, people pick it up from what you do. They just watch and they listen and they judge based on what you do. And the things that you do kind of, set the tone, set the standard of what's acceptable. And other people follow that. They enjoy that. They like that. When it is good, obviously, and when it's aligned. And I think we're very upfront about our values. And when people aren't aligned to those values, then culturally, we, you know, no matter how good you are, if you don't align to our values, and, you know, we're just not prepared to work with people like that. We just want to work with people who are aligned to our values. And that's a very hard line in Finder. And that's what I think keeps the culture in a really good place.
There's a lot of research been done over the diversity in the workspace, you know, and I like to ask this question to a lot of founders, you know, and how diverse is their place, you know, not just two different races coming and working together, but overall, for me, it's more about, you know, how do you value people's idea? How open you are as far as receiving the idea is concerned, like you mentioned earlier, you know, you should be able to also receive the feedback, right? And I want to sort of, you know, lean more towards the diversity, but it's an extension of the same question. How diverse is your place, you know, if you are to sort of, you know, think about and if you look around the people you are working with?
So, you know, I think, Finder is quite an eclectic group of people.
Why would you say that? Different,
it's just a, you know, I think it probably comes from you know, I think there's a good couple of shared values, you know, hard work, striving to win, being great, that sort of, you know, I think everyone shares those feelings. But then on top of that, doing it in a kind of a cool way and in your way, and, you know, all ideas being welcome, and you know, a real divergence and an acceptance, and I think that being that straight up value, and that builds that environment where you can be vulnerable, you can state your ideas. You know, people challenge me openly in all sorts of forums, and I have no problems with that at all. I enjoy it. Bring it on. And I encourage it. And I openly say, you know, this is a debate, and you can go against me in your views, and I'm going to share my views, but we're going to have an open debate, and that's fine. And I think that's probably comes from, you know, Frank and myself. You know, we're just very, we can have very heated conversations, but then we'll suddenly change views and turn and take the other person's view and agree with them, and then kick the idea around again and again until they're done and the best idea comes out. And I think people have sat there and just in amazement going, we're not going anywhere. And what are we doing? These guys are having this massive debate, and then they realize that's part of the process. And they lean into that and they enjoy that and they experience that. And then that sort of become part of that shared and diverse views where, you know, it's the merit of your views and your outcomes that you achieve, not necessarily who did it or where it came from. And I think that's just massively celebrated at Finder. The more creative, and the ones that aren't creative as well, a very up the center outcome that was achieved cost effectively, that's celebrated as well. Because sometimes that's needed, you know. It's just a lot of celebration of not just uniqueness for uniqueness sake, but in a celebration of achieving outcomes and an acceptance of those ideas and where they've come from.
Yeah. And what is the driver then? Like, you know, you mentioned there's an openness within Finder about accepting ideas and being open about the challenge and so forth, which is interesting on its own. But then there must be a significant amount of driver for you and also perhaps your co-founders. How do you keep that drive always intact?
Well, I think it starts from setting a big, ambitious goal, and then going and achieving that as fast as humanly possible time. And then standing there and then resetting that and saying, cool, that was good. And now what does great look like? Can we reset to be, you know, 10 times better than that? And let's imagine a world where that existed. And what does that look like? And what will that need? And when we normally sit there and look at that, we go, we just have no idea how that's even possible. But, you know, we sort of turn it around and go, okay, breaking that down, what would be required? What is needed in order to do this? And how do we get from here to there? Well, let's take a few steps forward. And as you move forward, you know, we're just very ambitious and extremely capable crew at Finder, extremely, like, just very intelligent go-getters that want to achieve and be great. And I think because of that, you know, you put those kind of people together and you give them a great mission, they go and solve those problems. They figure it out. And that's how I think you make a great organization. And that great organization serves their customers, and that's what takes care of the revenue and the profits and keeps the costs down.
So when we look at this future of Finder, is there a particular challenge that you are thinking, ha, this is something that we want to explore or maybe achieve that? What kind of challenge that you're trying to sort of, you know, achieve in the next year or so?
Well, I think, you know, we're trying to build some incredible technology really starts to help people save a lot of money and, you know, create a lot more simplicity in their financial situation. And I think that in and of itself, the core business, it just needs to scale more. It needs to become more efficient. And that's a different problem that, you know, normally in a startup, you really work on effectiveness. And what we've now been focused on is efficiency. So how do we get really efficient? That's new, right, for us. I know it sounds unusual. And that comes with hardening systems and tightening processes and, you know, trying to automate things as much as possible. And that's sort of, you know, again, a major focus. Then I think, you know, always you're looking at growth, right? Everyone's always focused on growth. Like, how do you keep growing? How do you keep serving more customers and delivering this great service to them in so many different ways and geographies and overcoming those challenges? I think that's sort of where we're at. I definitely think the market's unusual right now. Everyone's a bit pensive. Everyone's a bit unsure of where it's going to go and what's going to happen. So, you know, we kind of Everyone's taking small steps from here and trying to figure out where to go from here and what is next. Not the easiest thing to do, but I just think there are bets to be placed and people to bring on, and they'll have ideas as well. And yeah, it's kind of a bit different these days when you sort of in a scaled sense. Mm-hmm. You have to find great people that can build businesses, and I think that's the challenge.
Yeah, and I think scalability is often a talk, with founders. And you also mentioned efficiency. If I may ask, like, what kind of inefficiency that you see in Finder at the moment?
Collecting money, sending out invoices from start to finish is just, it's just the core process. The core system is just, it's just not super efficient. And it's not nothing fancy. It's just doing what we do and just doing it more efficiently. That's there's not much. It's just simple stuff, really.
All right. Fred, it was wonderful talking to you, by the way, and you were quite knowledgeable in different sectors, especially the ones that I'm also curious about. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing Finder doing awesome things in the future as well. I will be checking out Finder every now and then, just to see how things are moving forward. Yeah, and thank you for joining this session.
Awesome. It was great. Thank you so much as well.